Hey, HG101 fans, I want you to know that we're crowdfunding a brand new, gorgeously printed hardcover book covering 101 weird, obscure, historically important, and just plain cool Japanese video games. It's going to be called Hardcore Gaming 101 Presents Japanese Video Game Obscurities, but we can only put it out with your pledge. So check out hardcoregaming101.net. The link should be pretty much close to the top of the page. Japanese Video Game Obscurities. This is, if we get to do this, it's going to be our best looking book yet, and it's one of those books that it'll be about stuff you've probably never heard of. In fact, I can almost guarantee you won't have heard of almost all of it. So give a hoot, fund our book, $15 for the PDF, $20 plus shipping for the hardcover. Do it!
Hello and welcome to episode 66 of HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm a badass criminal and martial arts master who's been dubbed over by Gilbert Gottfried! My panelists today are...
I'm Bobinator.
I am Satanga.
And I am Weasel, back from cryogenic freezing.
On this podcast, we have three rules. Rule number one, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule number two, you can nominate one game at a time via five-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Rule number three, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, but don't nominate games we've already ranked. You can see the master list for yourself. Check it out at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames. Okay, so the next game we're talking about is Yakuza, which was nominated by Majestad on Stitcher, or I guess Majestade, if it's the typical silent E vowel relationship here. Developed by Sega, published by Sega for the PlayStation 2. Earliest release date and territory is December 8th, 2005, I'm assuming in the nation of Japan. We did mention this before, because when we were talking about Shenmue, we were talking about Shenmue and how this game is, like, weirdly enough, like, kind of is the, like, the fulfilling part of Shenmue's promise in turning that idea into a game.
Pretty much all the good parts of Shenmue with little of the bad.
Yeah, I'm going to step right out the gate with a punch in the face. Shenmue was never great. Yakuza is really what the series should have been, or at least sets the expectation of what I thought Shenmue would have been. So I'm glad that Sega, like, I don't know how much of that team came on to work on this, but I know that the team behind Yakuza was actually formed out of Amusement Vision, the guys who made Super Monkey Ball, if you can believe it.
I believe it.
They really turned a 180 and edge there. Cute monkeys rolling around and falling to their deaths. Okay, maybe it's not that far gone after all.
So let's really quickly...
That would certainly explain the UFO catcher machines, though.
Hey, oh yeah, the gachapon.
So let's very quickly go over what's the premise of this game. Not like what kind of game is it, but like what is the game about really fast.
In Yakuza, you play the role of Kazuma Kiryu, who is known throughout Tokyo as the dragon of the Dojima family, and shortly after having done a routine collections run on a bunch of people who owe you money by way of fists and golf clubs, as per procedure, turns out your boss is dead, and your sworn brother did it, so you elect to take the fall for him, do the time in prison, and when you get out, it's a very different world where everybody's at each other's throats, and you get to figure out why. Again, by way of fists and golf clubs, as is procedure.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it does mimic very much the plot of Once Upon a Time in America, that Sergio Leone's last movie about Jewish gangsters in Brooklyn in like the 1920s and 30s.
One thing that should be noted real quick is that Weasel is right. There is a lot of focus on fist and handheld weapons. There are very rarely any actual guns in this series.
Let's explain this. So the Yakuza, it's probably not the perfect way of pronouncing it, but it's definitely more correct than Yakuza. Although I don't really care what you say, because, you know, it's just however you pronounce it, it's fine with me. But the Yakuza are basically, it's not really, it's very, very much like the mafia families in as they operate in Italy. They are like locally based organized crime families that have a pretty strict kind of like hierarchy, very mafia-esque. I'm sure they differ in a lot of the particulars, but the basics are all transfer over. There are, I think in Japan, there are about five major Yakuza organizations. The biggest one by far is the I think the Yamaguchi family, or the Gucci, It doesn't matter. I'm probably wrong about that. But they have an interesting place in Japanese culture because they come out of, they're kind of a byproduct of the Japanese caste system as it existed pre-modern era, where there were, nobility classes, samurai classes, farmers and peasants, merchants, and then there were the burakumin, who were basically the people who did the jobs that society at that time considered to be unclean or shameful in some way, shape, or form. And these things are not necessarily things that would apply, that always make sense to us now. I think leather working, like leather tanning or something like that was one of those things. So they performed like essential functions for society, but for whatever reason, because human beings are just garbage all over the world, no matter where you go, they were, no country has a monopoly on awfulness. Let's put it that way. And on top of that, there's also like a very strong and remains to this day, a very strong stigma against foreigners, especially other East Asians. So people from Korea, people from the Philippines to a lesser extent, and Vietnam to a lesser extent, coming to Japan and making a living. It's not always easy. And so these gangs, the Yakuza, are made up overwhelmingly of people who have a background of one of these types. And they are not just criminal gangs, but they're also sort of like neighborhoods or like local neighborhood support organizations, such that after the Fukushima disaster, well, and also they still do a lot of the jobs that nobody else wants to do. Case in point, the Fukushima disaster, that nuclear power plant, as with most nuclear power plants at the time, was basically run by the Yakuza. And I don't know whether that had anything to do with the safety violations. I haven't, or not safety violations, but safety concerns. But I haven't heard that. But I have heard that it's like one of these things where people just don't want to inquire too deeply into it. And that may be why certain things were kind of worse than it seemed until it was too, and then it was too late. But they also did good things, like after tsunamis, especially. They mostly are, just like in Italy, like most of the activity is in the southern part of the country. And like after tsunamis and stuff, it's not uncommon at all for the Yakuza to be the first responders in an emergency. So they'll be out there like helping people like get food and doing other things like that. There's a very strong, and I don't know how much this comes up in the game, I'd like somebody to touch on that, but there's a very strong preference against violent confrontation between Yakuza gangs within their own culture, because they really don't want to draw attention to themselves and create problems for their community. The biggest Yakuza family does not even deal with drugs in the nation of Japan. Now they have, other satellite organizations all over the world that I'm sure sell hell of a heroin all the time, but not in Japan. So it's like they have this weird kind of system that helps them be integrated into society in a way that the mafia doesn't really, if that makes any sense. So you guys can take it from there, because I've not played the original Yakuza very much at all.
So I suppose the first thing that we ought to get off of the table right now is that the Yakuza depicted in Yakuza, henceforth referred to as the Tojo clan, because it is almost always the Tojo clan, they are really not anything like what Xerxes just described.
No, they're a bunch of jerks.
Like, there still isn't anything like a drug trade, but there's, like, allegations of human trafficking, there's all sorts of things relating to the sex trade.
That's also true.
And most importantly, there is a hell of a lot of street fighting.
That can be true.
There's all sorts of subdivisions within the Tojo clan, all headed by various families, and the guy that Kiryu works for, Shintaro Kazama or Fuma, depending on which, it gets confusing, they changed his name for localization purposes, but Shintaro's a very nice guy, he's basically Kiryu's dad, kinda, sorta, and he's the sort of ideal that I think Yakuza would like to see themselves as. There's some shades of gray in there, but usually he's working for the betterment of the nation and society. Everyone else who leads a family is pretty much an a-hole, so there's a lot of, worrying about this missing 10 billion yen and little girls at the heart of it. I'm not sure I should go too much into the plot, because it does take quite a few twists and turns along the way.
I think we can say, suffice it to say, there is a plot. It is interesting.
Yeah.
And if you play the game, you would be entertained by it.
As a stark contrast to Shenmue, it is an actually interesting plot.
I just want to say, I will say this game does go a little heavy on the cutscenes at points, so it's not the kind of game you just jump right into the fighting, for better or worse.
Yeah, it does take some patience. It's not the fastest-paced game out there, but I think it's one that's worth waiting for the water to boil, so to speak. Although the main plot does take a couple diversions away from the main story, which is a little bit of early installment weirdness.
Really? An open-world game has weird diversions from the story that branch off into weird paths going apparently nowhere?
There's one tangent where Kiryu has to help out the daughter of what becomes basically his best friend after he gets out of jail, so who's also a detective, but I shouldn't say too much else. Okay, seriously, enough plot.
So can someone go into the gameplay? Like, how does this... Like, this came out probably, I think, would we say during the open world, kind of sandbox world boom of the PS2 era?
Well, let me see when GTA San Andreas came out. I forget that exactly, but I know that when this game hit, and for some off-base reviewers who noticed it, there were an awful lot of comparisons to Grand Theft Auto, which are all completely balls. This game is the anti-GTA. And,
why is that? Explain why that is. Like, why? How?
It's a lot more focused around a tighter area, because, like, we're a GTA game, you're not really instructed to care about the civilians, or you just jack random cars and drive around and run people over. In a Yakuza game, you don't really need to, because the comparative size of the area you're going around is, like, it's not an entire city. It's not, like, all of Tokyo that you get to go around. It's just a very small, like, it's like a 3x3 grid of city blocks, but by comparison, everything is just compressed into those 3x3 city blocks. So there's a lot more places that you can go into and just be a patron. There's a lot more people that need your help. There's a lot of just random stuff going on.
Compare it to, like, kind of like the town that you start out in Shenmue, like, in terms of, like, size. And I mean, I know there's probably more to do, but I mean, like, in terms of, like, area traveled.
I would say it's actually even a little bit more compressed than Shenmue, because I mean, that had a few distinct neighborhoods and then the entire dock district, but this, by comparison, is a few really, really busy streets in the middle of the adult entertainment district of Tokyo.
Yep. Yeah, sorry, I should note that there's an actual real-life basis for the map. Fictionally, it's known as Kamurocho in-game, but it's very clearly patterned off of Kabukicho, which is a red-light district sector in Shinjuku of Tokyo. Yep, there are soap lands, I can tell you that for sure. But, you know, there's a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you can go through parts of Shinjuku and not notice that stuff. Like, I didn't.
They probably wouldn't want to heavily advertise it, the thing is, unless people are in the know. I don't know.
The thing is, like, a lot of stuff you won't see, even, like, perfectly, like, unsalacious businesses in Tokyo, you won't notice are there because they're stacked on top of each other.
Very
little space, and there's a lot of places where it's like, oh, like, you'll be looking for, like, for example, like, a record store or a game store or something, and you'll be like, I think it's supposed to be here, but I don't see it anywhere. You got to go into the building, go to where the elevator is, look at the sign, and look at the listing, and you'll see, oh, okay, it's on the 8th floor, all right. And you get a tiny elevator, and you go up to the 8th floor.
Yeah, that's how some buildings work in this series. I'm not sure in so much you see that as much in the first game here, but I should also note that the map of Kamurocho is in every other Yakuza game to come after this. Well, except for some of the spin-offs. But it's sort of a clever little catch they have that they built the map here to start, and then in future games they just make all sorts of various tweaks and additions here and there. And it still feels fresh for each new game, but it's also coupled alongside an entirely new city. But when they made the first Yakuza, they basically made half of all the other games to come after it. Some might call that lazy. I call that an interesting allocation of resources.
Look, I mean, as games get more complicated and more costly to create, Japanese developers like Sega have to make compromises because they do not have the manpower to do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so their choices are either to outsource or work with a Western developer. Ugh, perish the thought.
No.
I'm kidding.
Jesus Christ.
Or do something like that.
I have a question I can ask about this game. So there have been a lot of sequels to this game, and very soon we'll have a remake of this game released in the U.S. And what do you guys think have the later games improved from this game?
Well, Can we, before we get into that, can we talk
about, well,
we didn't really actually talk about the gameplay of this game, and then we can talk about how it's been improved upon.
Sure.
Your basic game flow of Yakuza is, like, immediately following about 15-ish minutes of cutscene and exposition. Generally, you're told to go a place and do a thing marked on the map with a pink dot, but in the process of getting there, you may be randomly accosted by a random thug or 12. It really depends on how far in the game you are. That's when it transitions to a distinct battle arena sort of thing. I mean, it's still obviously supposed to be the same part of the city that you're in, but there is a loading screen, and in fact, in the first game, that is a bit of a long wait to load, something about 30 seconds at most. A bit overblown, to be honest. But from there, you have, I mean, honestly, fairly simple combo-based beat-em-up kind of stuff, because you got weak attacks, and you got strong attacks, and you've got a throw button. But where this one gets interesting is that you have what's called a heat bar. It's like a super move thing, except it's context-sensitive. You don't dial in complicated super move twiddles like you would on a fighting game. You just either grab a weapon or grab a guy and drag him over nearby something hard and hit triangle, and then you're treated to this short but enjoyable little animation of Kiryu smashing a dude's head against a building or the hood of a car or with a golf club. Or sure, I'm bringing up the golf clubs a lot lately.
Well, you did get that pretty early in the game, but yeah, you know, there are also all sorts of various weapons you can find, like bats and knives and, you know, furniture, all that, anything you can get your hands on. And, although I should note that, like, this game isn't gory. There's, like, a few clouds of blood here and there, but ultimately the bone structure of the enemies who you hardly smash are fine. This game, it doesn't go for gore or shock value. It keeps things relatively conservative on that front. So it's kind of, so the violence is almost more like comic booky in a way, and I think that's good for the atmosphere that isn't too gritty, but it's gritty enough.
I mean, suffice to say, just about everything Kiryu does to people with the heat button is pretty painful looking. It's kind of amazing that anybody's actually surviving half of these things.
Yeah, Kiryu doesn't make it a point to kill. He's a nice guy. He's trying to go straight, so to speak. Although I think in later games you can, like, throw people out windows, but that's neither here nor there.
Out windows, off bridges.
Yeah. the fighting itself is fun, but in the first game it is pretty rusty. Like, there's kind of a lock-on feature, but it's kind of, it's not, like, really well-defined in this game, and you will usually miss quite a few thugs with your combos if you, like, press your combos too much and leave yourself wide open. It takes some time to get used to the pace, and you don't have as many moves as you do in later games as well, so the combat at this point is a little Spartan, but the heat moves do really add a lot to it.
The thing that I do feel I need to bring up, unless you were about to... Mm-hmm. The developers behind the combat system very clearly realized that there was something wrong with you constantly missing your combos because you can't turn around mid-combo, you're just facing the same direction. Mm-hmm. But rather than fixing that in the combat system itself, you have to learn it from a master in a park.
Master Kamaki. You can actually learn some more moves as you go along the game. And of course, there's an experience system where you can increase three different tiers, like one for your heat gauge, one for your techniques, and one for your, like, health and toughness and whatnot. And that would go on to define the experience for the rest of the series as well. The fighting is, I think, reasonably fun, but in the first game, it's honestly pretty hard to get used to, and if anyone has ever played any other Yakuza game after this one, even two, even the first immediate sequel, it would be very hard to go back to the first and try and get used to its action, because it's a little unrefined, let's say.
A little stiff.
Oh, yes.
I'll call it.
Yeah, stiff as a board with a nail on it, which I think is another weapon you can use. Yeah. I don't remember.
It's definitely not as stiff as, like, the PS1 era, like Fighting Force.
Oh, or Rising
Fighting
Xan.
Force has worse problems.
Yeah, and that game was supposed to be the Streets of Rage 4 of its time, and that didn't quite work out.
I always like Akito better, but that's just me.
Yeah.
There is one other thing we haven't mentioned yet that's kind of weird about this game. Mm-hmm. This is the only game in the series that has an English dub, and it's not great.
Oh, man, I almost forgot it.
It can be good sometimes.
Okay.
Because, I mean, you've got Michael Madsen and Mark Hamill on cast. Then you also have the inexplicable choice of Bill Farmer as Detective Date in the exact same voice that he uses to voice Sam from Sam and Max Hit the Road.
Yeah, Goofy is one of the most prominent voices in this game, if you can believe it. It always cracks me up. I can't take it seriously. But, yeah, as you mentioned, Mark Hamill as Goro Majima, the resident eyepatch psycho who more or less became the most popular character of the series besides Kiryu, because he's insane and has kind of a big man crush on Kiryu and is oftentimes very amusing, if not sometimes psychotic. Also a very hard boss fight to boot, but,
I mean, could you really complain about the man in the snakeskin jacket with the propensity for crashing into buildings with great pink semi-trucks?
Yeah. I don't think it was pink in this one. It was only pink in the Yakuza 3, but, I don't remember.
There's
something symbolic in there, whatever the case. Okay.
Well, suffice to say, the man loves his entrances.
Yeah, he's very theatrical. But, yeah, the dub is very much all over the place. I mean, they have a lot of good talent on it. It's just, it was directed very flatly. There's also a lot of profanity.
Yeah, that's another weird thing about the way this game was localized. There's two reasons behind this. It's like, first, they were definitely trying to get it marketed alongside the GTAs and True Crimes and Postal 2s of its day. But on the other hand, the Yakuza are apparently known for having a very particular manner of speech that comes off as simultaneously very crude and very specific, very specialized. And Sega of America decided that the easiest and most accurate way to translate this is to pepper the language with F-words.
Yeah, it's really weird because you can't, like, Japanese doesn't have so much obscenities as it has things that are, like, undiplomatic, I guess you would say, or, like, there's self-deprecating ways of saying things, and there's, like, normal ways. And, like, a lot of Yakuza, like, I don't know what it's like in Tokyo exactly, but I know that, like, the typical Yakuza thing is, like, would be, like, cities like Osaka and other, and much further south, and they're all known for being kind of, like, a little bit louder than the average Japanese person. I guess you would just say it's, like, kind of loud. If you were to translate it directly, or not directly, but indirectly, and, like, try to come up with it, like, you could either go, like, New Jersey or Texas. Like, it doesn't really, there's no direct corollary as far as I can tell. But it wouldn't be full of F-bombs because that concept does not exist. Like, it's not, like, there is such thing as profane language, but it's not, like, profane the way we think of profanity. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, it's a very weird bent for the localization, which I think is more miss than hit. In future games from 2 onward, they would just sub the original Japanese language, which is not only more fitting, but also probably a much better budget measure, so everybody wins.
Although this is, like, one of the only games in existence where you get to hear Cam Clark utter the F-word.
Yeah, Clark is this, like, one punky face, like, really early on, and he's a low-level goon who chews Kiryu out. I should also note that, like, just one look at Kiryu, he looks like a real wall of muscle, and yet all these noodly goons keep picking fights with him. Like, what's up with that? Do they all have death wishes or whatever? Or, like, pain wishes, because Kiryu doesn't kill. I don't know. So yeah, combat can be stiff, localization here and there. But I should definitely mention that there is more to this game than all the fighting and the cursing. There are quite a few distractions here and there. Like the batting center, the UFO catcher, blackjack, roulette, and baccarat, if I'm not mistaken. Pachinko machines, if that's your thing, it's not really mine. And hostess clubs, to boot. So, I don't know if Weasel wanted to go into any of the side missions or whatever. And the Colosseum. I'm quite fond of that.
Yeah.
Does this game have an arcade like the other games do?
It does, but the only things that you can play at the arcade are the UFO catcher machines in the first game, I think.
Yeah, future installments would gradually add in more games until Yakuza 5, I believe, actually has Virtua Fighter 2 in it. And then, of course, Yakuza 0 features OutRun, Super Hang-On, Fantasy Zone, and Space Harrier. So, quite a bit of Sega integration later on, but that wasn't the case just yet.
Yeah, it's honestly, most of the distractions you're going to find in the first Yakuza are outside the arcades. Because, I mean, as mentioned, there's pachinko, there's gambling, there's Was Mahjong in the first game, do you remember? Or was that from 2?
Yeah, I forget when Mahjong was supposed to be. I know there's a Mahjong parlor in 2, but I don't think it was playable in the first.
Yeah, but there's also, like, even if you're not specifically going places to be entertained, like, you could go explore the dining and drinking culture of Tokyo and just... Like, there's a completion element for ordering every item off of every restaurant menu.
Oh, yeah. Whenever you get a drink, they actually go into a little bit of, like, history of where the drink comes from and how it's made. And, like, they must have consulted, like, an actual, like, alcohol, liquor connoisseur for all of this. Because,
It's not just random Japanese brands either. Because, I mean, you got all the Suntory whiskeys. But yeah. Then you've also got, you can order Jack Daniels and Ballantine's Finest and Macallan.
Yeah, and Glenfiddich and that other one.
I think even Beefeater.
Oh, yeah, right. So, if you like to get drunk, and if you do, that makes Kiryu more powerful, but it makes fights happen more often. So, you know, take what you can get.
Yeah, because random jerks on the street will be like, hey, booze breath.
Yeah, something like that. I'm not sure if we want to go into hostess clubs a bit, because I know that's a persisting element throughout the entire series. It's not a bit of a controversial one. I don't know. It's one of those things which is very endemic to Japanese culture. I'm not sure how much we should or can't explain here.
I'll explain it. Okay, so...
Go ahead.
Basically, there are bars where you go to and you pay for the pleasure of speaking to a young woman. And it's nothing beyond that. Like, you basically, you're paying for the fun of having a... young, somewhat attractive woman pretend to be interested in whatever bullshit you have to say. That's what it is. Like that's it.
Yeah, more or less.
I'm sure it costs a lot of money. I've never done it.
It does,
but I'm sure you can really blow a lot of cash.
I know in one of the later games you get to spend like 10 million yen on like a fountain of champagne, which is like one glass stacked on top of 4 glasses, stacked on top of 9, and so on. And they just pour the champagne down the top and it just cascades down, and that's only really something you should, probably never spend on at all. Like, I think there are rewards for falling through with the hostesses and various... Oh, I forget exactly how it works out. It's not something I pursued too much in the earlier games, but I know that Kiryu can, you know what, if he gets on good enough with any of the specific women. Not usually how it works in real life, just a disclaimer.
Well, I mean, like everything else in this game, it's a heightened reality. It's just like the difference between like actual organized crime and like The Sopranos, right? Like, you know, it's everything's going to be... Or for that matter, like Goodfellas, which is like way over the top, right?
Uh-huh.
So, and Yakuza movies and TV shows and stuff like that they present the idealized version of it. Anyway, we've been talking about this for a long time. I think we got to rank it.
One more thing I should mention, though, there are also various side quests away from the main story you can get into, and if you do them all, you get to fight this really, really super powerful guy called Amon. That's also a persisting element in the game, in the rest of the series. And, like, everything that the rest of the series does is firmly rooted in the first Yakuza, so it definitely deserves credit for, you know, kickstarting the gradual snowball that would build around this series. But ranking the game itself, the first one is very difficult to do because it is so outclassed by its successors for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I am admittedly a gigantic fan of this series, I feel really bad for what I'm about to do to it.
Oh, you have a ranking idea?
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the big list here. I'm seeing Shenmue at 80, though I definitely don't think it needs to go quite that low.
Okay.
But I'm thinking definitely...
That's not that low.
Yeah, it's not a bad placement.
Top 100 is pretty good.
I am thinking, though, that it probably shouldn't go above Streets of Rage 2.
No.
So, I mean, that's admittedly still a wide swath to cut, but...
Well, let's see. If we're replacing around Shenmue... You know, even the first Yakuza, I think, did more and better things than the first Shenmue, but not by too much.
How about between Yoshi's Island and Demon Souls?
That's kind of on the high side.
Bob, I'm glad you're willing to highball Yakuza, but I'd be more willing to do that for 2 or 4 or 0. But the first game...
That's
or
fair.
5. But the first game, it might be a little overmuch, to be honest. I want this to be placed low enough so that the rest of the series, if we get around to reviewing those in the future, can most prominently outdo it.
There's a whole section of the list that seems to be devoted to kind of first entries in series that would kind of overtake them. Not necessarily devoted to it, but for example, like I would say that NFL Blitz, Ninja Gaiden, Far Cry, Duke 3D, maybe, I guess. Maybe not Duke 3D. That kind of range is where I think is more appropriate from what you guys, as you guys have described it. And you might as well now really quickly touch on how the successors to this have built upon it and why we're saying that.
Yeah, sure.
Well, to be honest, like my quick summary of, because like the Yakuza series, as much as they keep continuing the storyline and as cool as the storyline is, the gameplay elements have very much iterated upon themselves with each successive entry. Because Yakuza 2 made the extremely important move of greatly shortening the load times going in and out of battles.
Oh, yes.
You would not believe how much that improves the gameplay experience. And also makes it so that Kiryu knows the turning attacks by default instead of having to learn them.
Yep.
Which smooths out the fighting experience like a hundredfold. Yakuza 3, I could say things about the way the story goes. Not a particular fan of the story in that one, but neither here nor there. Makes the camera control an awful lot breezier. Adds a lot more things that you can do and punch and look at. It brings the experience a lot closer to the kind of stuff that people who aren't obsessed with Yakuza games expect out of their games. Better camera controls, clearer everything. Everything gets streamlined. You don't have to wait for everything. 4 adds all the playable characters. 5 adds 4 new cities. 0 speeds things up to 60 frames a second and greatly reduces the transitions in and out of battles again. It just goes further and further, streamlining every time, and it's just it just adds up to the most amazing feeling ever. Which is why it's so hard to go back to the first game after all these years.
Yeah, many have considered in America, as of this recording, Yakuza 0, the apotheosis of the series overall, that has really extended the systems out to their maximum, and has also given you a lot more stuff to do. There's also a lot more mini-games and gambling and whatnot. I know that Weasel in 0 became a fan of Choku... what was the name of that one game again?
CeeLo?
Oh yeah. Not to be confused with the R&B artist, but yeah, there's a lot more stuff to do in future games, and it's a lot smoother, it looks a lot better. The story jags up and down across various installments, but if you don't care about that, then each Yakuza game, from what I understand, is better than the one to come before it, for the most part. And as of this recording, we're just a couple days before the Western official release of Yakuza Kiwami, which is a complete remake of the first game for the PS4, primarily based off of Yakuza Zero's engine, but it retells the original story, but makes things a lot cooler overall. Like, it has the various changing fighting styles from Zero and all the smoothness of the combat from there. Like, they add some new scenes to flesh out the story, and they have like almost all the major game side quests and whatnot from previous games coming into this one, and it's been getting very good reviews on the whole. I think like an 8
back to ranking
oh,
Yakuza.
Wait, ranking okay, but yeah, so keep an eye out for that. Now, as for ranking this, I was going to throw Xerxes a little bit of a bone and place this between Blue Singer and Vexanadu, because while Goro Majima is a rather awesome character, he's not Dogs Bauer,
no.
And you don't really get a good feel of his character in the first game. He's much more of a psycho than a more affable crazy man, so...
Yeah, I mean, this game would benefit greatly from Dogs Bauer, and they could probably do it.
Mm-hmm. That's actually not too far away from where I was about to pinpoint into. I was admittedly going to go it a little bit higher. I was thinking between Final Fight and Wonder Boy and Monster Land.
Yeah, it's not bad either.
I'm okay with that. I mean, if you kind of think about it, Yakuza is kind of sort of like a halfway point between those two games, so...
And it's definitely better than Morrowind.
Hot takes!
Can't deny that.
But, yeah, so the first Yakuza was quite good out the starting gate, but if and when we rank future games, and I highly encourage our listeners to have us talk about more Yakuza... We probably won't be as disorganized and meandering as this one. One of my favorite persisting modern series today, and it's it gives me a lot of hope for the state of games as they are, and this has been a really good year for them. So, Xerxes, what do you think between Final Fight and Wonder Boy? I don't know if you wanted to adjust that a bit.
I don't know. I mean, that's okay, I guess. I don't know. I don't really know where to go with this one. It's not really my call. If everybody else can live with that, I can live with that.
I can certainly live with it too.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, I would only rate this game below Blue Stinger if Dogs Bauer were voiced by Michael Madsen.
No, if that would make Dogs Bauer worse.
Well, he was.
Maybe yeah, you're right.
He was voiced by Dr. Robotnik from.
No, okay, look. All right, look. No, I've got to put my foot down. It's got to be below Blue Stinger.
Because
it's not even the best Yakuza game, right?
That's true. I would probably only rank the rather muddled zombie spin-off Dead Souls lower than this one. I don't know. It's hard.
Yeah,
to
honestly. Yeah.
Yeah. That.
I mean, think about it. Like, I mean, look at the games that are around that range too. Like Xanadu. Okay, whatever. Scorched Earth, Contra, mm-hmm. Hardcore, Ranger X, Ikaruga, God Hand. Is Yakuza really in that class? I don't think it sounds like that from what you guys are saying.
All right, look, I apologize, Weasel, but I'm going to bump this down a bit more if you don't mind me doing so. Mm. But I still want to place it above Shenmue. I think the fairest place at this point would be between God Hand and Yi's The Ofenfil Gata.
Okay, I mean, that's...
You drive a hard bargain, sirs, but I think I will have to agree.
All right. I think that's fair.
Because the fighting is a lot more fun in God Hand. I'll say that.
Way more fun.
Yeah.
But a lot harder, too, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, given the choice between Heat Finishers and Benny Hill Kung Fu, I'm going to choose the Benny Hill Kung Fu.
Okay, so that's where it goes. Yakuza's between God Hand and East the Oath and Felghana.
Listeners, this is Mike, the real-life alter ego of Satenga, and the self-admitted weakest link of TG47K's regulars. But if you don't think I'm totally dragging down the quality of the podcast, then hear me out. I've been writing for Hardcore Gaming 101 since I was in high school, and I'm proud to see the site flourish. But it could always use more help for the benefit of its creator, Kurt, especially since he's paying us for these episodes now. If you want to get more incentive for Xerxes, Cal, Bobinator, our editor Jeff, and myself, along with our other friends and guests to put on the best damn show we can, make a pledge at www.patreon.com/HG101. If John Madden gets paid to say obvious things about sports, shouldn't we get reward for babbling about video games? If you agree, that's www.patreon.com/HG101. Thank you, and peace forever!
So the next game we're talking about is River City Ransom, which was nominated by @AngryEd on Twitter and developed by Technos Japan, published by Technos for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Earliest release date and territory is April 25th, 1989 in Japan. This is not the first Kunio-kun game. That would be, I guess, Renegade, technically. Am I correct about that?
Yeah, I believe so. But this would be by and far the most popular one for a long reigning time. Originally released as Downtown Nakatsu Monogatari in Japan and Street Gangs in PAL regions, which is... I think River City Ransom's the perfect title, though, because it takes place in...
Bart has joined a violence gang.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
I love that. They should have called it Violence Gangs. That would be so great. Yeah, so this is an interesting thing. So Kunio-kun, I think everybody kind of knows mostly from the dodgeball games, like Super Dodgeball.
Oh, yeah. That's probably the other most famous one. Kunio's either about beating up punks in a sprawling, non-linear city, or sports. There's been a lot of sports spinoffs.
Right.
We only got like half of them. Like we got the soccer one.
Crashing the Boys.
The Olympics one or decathlon or whatever that one was.
Which is pretty great.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat game. I like great. It. But yeah, Super Dodgeball is probably the most prominent spinoff of this. But we're not talking about that now.
What's crazy about this is I had no idea this was the case, but it's made by Technos, which means it's connected to Double Dragon.
Yeah, of course.
Now, I never played River City Ransom when I was a kid, when the NES was new, because I thought it looked like a crappy Double Dragon ripoff, and I had been burned before by a certain game called Bad Dudes. I had been burned before by stuff like that. By even Renegade, which is kind of garbage.
It's a really rough cut, to say the least. They didn't
very bad.
Yeah, they didn't refine the basics of beating up until Double Dragon, and then like RCR was when they actually decided to add RPG elements to the school of beating up, which River is City half the Ransom. Reason why this game is famous. Yeah.
Right. So River City Ransom, the cool thing about this, as Satenga just said, is it adds like these weird RPG / vaguely open world elements. It's a great game to follow up with Yakuza on, because it is very much like a baby's first Yakuza game in a lot of ways. Like, it doesn't have the kind of like non-battling type things. It is still a beat 'em up, but you're operating within a neighborhood, and each screen connects to other screens. You can go to a mall, you can buy items that will increase your stats or replenish your health, et cetera, et cetera. Exactly the way you think it's going to work. The art style is really good. The Renegade game, the first game in the series, did not really have a distinctive... It really did look like kind of like a slightly crappier Double Dragon. Whereas this game...
Look realistic, yeah.
Yeah, this game goes for a very, like, super manga style, or I guess you would say, like, or like cutesy style thing. And
it's almost like what they call super deformed, small bodies, big heads. Yeah. not quite there, but closer to there than a more realistic game.
It looks like Mighty Final Fight. It's like, if you look, like, whatever Mighty Final Fight is, that's this. Or maybe Mighty Final Fight might technically be super deformed, right? Because their heads are...
Mighty Final Fight definitely counts for that. That's in a close running with this for best beat 'em up on the NES, which is a bit of a sparse pool.
I don't know. I kind of do like Double Dragon 2 a lot.
Yeah, that one too. They're all up there.
Double Dragon 2 in general has one of the better, but a criminally underused beat 'em up mechanics, where like you have buttons that cover the different. You know, if you press the punch button, you're punching to the right, right?
Yeah, the directional attacks. That was actually the directional left right buttons. That was actually from Renegade. So they put that into
game. Renegade did not impress me.
We dwell too much on that. On the focus of RCR, it doesn't have that control scheme. But
it's got a weird control scheme. We got to go over this. Yeah. This is probably the biggest drawback of the game. So it is like very much like the original Double Dragon, the arcade version, but. You have to, like, it has punches and kicks as separate things, and in order to jump, you got to press A and B, and is that how it worked in, actually, the NES Double Dragon?
Pretty much, yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, NES Double Dragon had the two-button jump.
That's right. Yeah, this is a bad idea.
In late game, randomly becomes a spin kick and makes things way harder.
Yeah. The good news is there's not all that much platforming in RCR, so it's not as much of an issue.
Yeah, it's not. But it does become an issue because, like, the jump-kicking thing is a big part of beat-em-ups, and that's how people want to play, and it's a good way to play.
Yeah, jump kicks aren't very useful in this one, unfortunately. In fact, you're probably going to get your ass beaten around by all but the weakest gangs at first. And there is actually a color coding of gang strength. Like, the light blue and pink ones are really low tier. Then you get to, like, these tougher, like, gray and green-shirted ones. And I think, like, the toughest gang in the game is, like, blood red shirts or whatever. Also, I should note that the t-shirt and jeans look is endemic to River City Ransom specifically. They wore those, like, full-body Japanese school uniforms.
We got to talk about the localization, because I think this is actually one of the best localized games, examples of a good localization on the NES era that I can think of. Like,
barf!
Yeah, I mean, not just that stuff, but we'll get into that. But, like, yeah, they took a game that, like Renegade, of course, because this is part of the same series, like, it has a Japanese, like, teenage street hoodlum aesthetic, which really means, like, they're talking about, like, school uniforms, which nobody wears these uniforms anymore, even now in Japan. Like, they just don't exist. But it has a very, like, strong, it resonates with that audience. It communicates, like... tough kids. And believe it or not, this does tie in directly to Yakuza, because a lot of the Yakuza's, like, criminal operations, like the most criminal stuff that they do, they usually have non-family members doing it, and a lot of the time you get your start by being one of these kids who's doing this stuff for them. So it is very, like, it's like you fall into this lifestyle at this age, and that's what this game would have been playing on if we understood it that way. But luckily, they changed it, so everybody's wearing jeans and t-shirts, and they don't change anything that they don't have to, but they do change the stuff that I think matters. Like, if you know what to look for, you can tell that you're still in Japan, without a doubt. Right down to, like, the little reflector strips that are tied around, like, the lampposts and stuff like that. Like, that is exactly how it works over there. Like, the lack of sidewalks in most places, that's what it's like.
The outdoor telephone, public payphone stuff.
Right. I mean, it's all over. If you know what you're looking for, you can see it. But as a kid, I don't think I would have noticed it. And I think that, like, they add all the different gang names. I don't know what they would have been in Japanese. I've never looked at that. But
I'd like to know what the Japanese equivalent of the generic dudes is.
I bet you they didn't translate it directly. Because what are some of the best gang names here? The generic dudes is great. The frat boys is great.
I can't remember if this was something they just added in the GBA version or not, but there's the dragons.
Yeah, I don't know. That's not that, like, usually they're really funny in the NES version.
Well, there's the mob, the internationals, the cowboys, and the plague are like the two strongest ones, I think. Oh, but let me see. I know there had to be goofier ones, though. There's frat guys. One's apparently called the squids, if this is accurate.
Wait. Yeah, the jocks, yeah.
Oh, the jocks. I know that they added several more in the Game Boy Advance remake of this game. I think, like, the gamers were one of the bonus ones they put in.
They're the worst.
But, yeah, they're pretty vicious. That's pretty accurate.
Wasn't there a gang full of nerds?
They're like glasses dudes who show up in all of the gangs. But, I mean, okay, so there's that. That's a cool localization touch, like, to make it funny, make the gang names funny. But on top of that, they also add, like, really great little reaction dialogues for the bad guys. When you finish them off, they'll say something like "barf" or "mama" or something like that. Like, that kind of thing.
Is this fun yet?
Yeah. It's cute. Like, it's little things like that. and it has a big effect on, you know, that's had a lot of impact on people. Like, I think that it's just a weird NES game. It's one of those NES games that was not super well known when it was new. I can assure you of that. Nobody cared.
Yeah, I missed out on it in the days when my brother managed to get... Oh, the Homeboys, that was another one.
Oh, yeah.
When my brother managed to get various games from this one rental shop that was, like, throwing the NES games out, and he got some good deals, but RCR wasn't one of them. This is very much the definition of a cult classic.
Yeah.
That was one that people recognize in retrospect, right. And then just became, like, really... semi-famous for
did Nintendo Power ever, like, seriously cover this game?
I know they did. No, I remember that they did. You know what? Let me research this.
Really quickly, like, don't spend too much time on it because we're going to have to wrap this up pretty quick. Like, yeah, I mean, like, a lot of... I always think of it as one of, like, the early cult classics of the NES, like, the emulation era, what I call it, which is, like, the era not immediately after the NES was taken off the market, but just, like, 2 years after it, which is when, like, Nesticle was the thing.
Yeah, like, 97, 98.
Right. It wasn't that much longer later, and then people were discovering all these games, and they were discovering, to a certain extent, they were discovering, Famicom-only titles, but for the most part, the earliest hits of that era were games like River City Ransom, or Guardian Legend, or Legacy of the Wizard, and stuff like that.
Crystallis.
Crystallis, although that was reasonably popular when it was new.
Mm-hmm.
But things like that that had, like, an appeal that maybe didn't really catch on at first, but it was definitely there once people had Super Nintendos and Genesises and things like that and PlayStations, and had been playing RPGs, and then they could go back and appreciate some of these games and really get into it. And this is one of the classics among classics on the NES.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you bring that up, too, because literally the reasons that I know about River City Ransom is from reading ClassicGaming.com back in 98, 99. And there was just a random little retrospective article about the game on the front page.
Yeah, actually.
That I would bet anything was actually written by our own Kurt Kalata, if I'm not mistaken.
ClassicGaming.com, I believe. Did they have, like, a mailbag type thing where you, like, send emails?
I think they might have at the time.
I know that they had Cycling Game of the Week for...
Yeah, they did that too, yeah. So this is kind of interesting. It's like, I've forgotten all about this, but I was regularly featured in, like, the mailbag things. Like, anytime I wrote in, the guy would publish it.
Nice.
I believe it was Fragmaster was the guy's name.
Oh, man. Fragmaster. That's a name I haven't heard in ages.
Fragmaster.
We're going down the nostalgia pipe.
Oh, man, this is great. So
vintage internet stuff here.
I've never actually talked about this on the show before, but I am actually the... I can't remember exactly what my name was, but it was some weird like nonsense. Like it didn't make any. It's just some like AOL type screen name type thing. But I was I got on this guy's good side for some reason because I wrote this long letter about how I used to have nightmares about the game Burger Time. I could never live this down because he always thought it was funny. Like he would mention it every time because the mailbag thing is like people would write in and then he'd write like a little like pithy couple comments after that. And then he'd go on to the next letter. And every time I would write in, he would like say like something. Don't forget, this is the guy who's terrified of Burger Time. Just letting you know. I was in high school. This is like my first like game writing type thing. It wasn't really a gig, but it was what I did. And I'm basically, if you go back, if you can find it, if that stuff is still out there, and you go through the mailbag columns from probably starting in 97 or 98, if you see one guy who keeps coming up again and again and again saying stupid stuff, that's me. And I wrote a couple Game of the Weeks for him, too. I think I did the original NES Ninja Turtles. I did G.I. Joe for the NES and some other stuff that I've talked about a lot since then in my middle age. So this is very much a part of that scene. That feels so good to talk about. I have nothing but warm feelings for Frag. Fragmaster, if you're out there, come on the show. We'd love to have you. I don't know what your real name is, but... we'd love to have.
I wonder if we should just transition back into the game just a little bit before ranking it.
I'm not sure we talked enough
about the gameplay besides the beating up, though, because you forgot to mention...
You buy stuff in the mall, and it increases your stats.
Yeah, and then you get, like, various new moves as well. I will say, though, if you're looking for challenge, this isn't really the game to bring it, because if you're patient enough, you can just earn enough money. Betty and Clyde are very good for that.
I do want to make a small rant about this game. Nothing major, but...
okay.
I'm not always fond of games with RPG elements like this, because I feel like the kind of the challenge is just being patient enough to grind till your numbers are high enough to get through whatever is challenging you, more than any real sense of skill.
Well, in a sense, though, like, in this game, like, if you get your butt kicked by dudes, like, you don't gain stats and stuff from fighting. You gain stats from buying items, right? So you lose half your money every time you die. It's really easy to get caught in like a brutality loop where you just keep going and getting killed, and you never gain enough money to raise stats. So it's not entire. It's not
this game.
Yeah, like you might accidentally get juggle comboed by your own thrown trash can.
Yeah, this game definitely has some early game hell going on in it. But you purchase enough stuff, like you get like I think like cowboy boots at some point that really boosts your kick really high. Like just grab various stuff at the various sushi restaurants or whatever that. Boost your stats, and then, you know, you'll be beefy enough for the end game, and the final boss is a real pushover to boot. If you get, like, the dragon feet that makes you kick really fast 3 times, that will already take care of a lot of the problems. And you, like, get the Grand Slam, which also does that, but with weapons. And then, like, get a trash can. It's a very strong weapon with the Grand Slam. You'll pretty much just, well, you'll take out the trash, literally. So, it's not the most challenging game, it's one that does require patience, but... I think the atmosphere is really half the reason why this one's as famous as it is. So I'm not going to dog it too much for that.
Okay, so where do we want to put this on the big old list?
Well, this one is kind of a classic. I'm not sure how much we should promote it just based on cult classic status alone.
It does have, like, it does have butts, right? You got butts in
there. Oh, yeah! That's something I totally forgot to say. Unlike Yakuza, there's no soaplands, but there is a sauna, and it has uncensored ass in it. Which is one of the more humorous...
It's like the best kind of uncensored ass.
Probably like the most nudity ever seen in an American release of Nintendo game.
Yeah.
Well, official anyway.
Yeah, considering Golgo 13's nudity censored.
I was about to mention that. So, you know, it gets male butt points, so that's something.
Yes.
However many points that's actually worth.
Yeah. I think it's worth a lot. That's actually a big, like, weird kind of rarity in NES games. Like, there was a lot of stuff that was, like, flirting with the edges of, like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, very, very, like, kind of PG eroticism, I guess. But this is, like, it's not meant to be. It's just meant to be funny. But it's great that it stayed in there. So I think that's, and it is funny. Like, it is really funny when you see it.
You have to work fairly hard. I think the sauna's laid into the game. It's only like 2 or 3 screens away from River City High itself. But it is well worth playing up to that point. Also, potentially, you can just like run from the beginning to the end without fighting anyone. But you're like, you can't get in until you beat some of the gang leaders. So it's kind of moot. But it's interesting to know that most of the map is at your fingertips from the very beginning.
I mean, we got to put this somewhere. Like, I think, as we said, like, it's really... it's more of a, like, endearing game than it is, like, a good game.
That's like, a good, good way of putting it, yeah.
But it's good, but it's mostly like it's just the fun of going back and playing it again. It's like comfort food. You know
that's
what I mean? Like
a great way of putting it. No, I completely
mashed
agree.
Potatoes and gravy is a good food, but would I count it among like the best things I've ever eaten? Never. Like,
plus, I have to give it some pretty serious props for having just a ridiculously fast pace, despite all the slowdown.
That too.
Yeah, I mean the fighting does get really awkward. Like, you will be running off screen and bounce and smash your skull onto nothing so many times. That's probably the most frustrating part of the game to me, is like when you don't know where you're going, you're running around, and if you sometimes you go to the edge of the screen, you move to another screen. Other times you smack into an invisible wall and you can die that way. It's not really fair, but you know, there's other stuff like that too. Like you get clowned by your own weapon throws a lot of times.
Yeah, I try not to pick weapons up until I get the grand slam anyway. But,
it is kind of important, I think, early in the game to be using the like chains and stuff. But what I like about the game is that it, unlike Double Dragon and other NES beat 'em ups, like when you enter a screen, if there's dudes that you can't see, enemies that you can't see because they're off the screen, if they decide to throw something at you, it'll just come flying out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Like so many times you'll enter a screen, you'll see this like bike chain like flying through the air immediately. And for some reason I find that really, really funny.
Speaking of the dudes, just one more little nice touch of garnish. Occasionally, they'll run off if they just like, screw this, I'm out of here. They see that you're beating up for the rest of the gang. So
that is a cool point. Like, we credit a lot of times like Earthbound Zero or Earthbound Beginnings or whatever we call it now with doing stuff like that where the bad guys will run away from you if you're too high a level. But it's something about I can't think of any other beat 'em up where if you just like are just slamming the other dudes on the screen that other people will be like, forget this, I'm out of here. Do you guys remember in Iron Man 3 where like he like shoots those two guys and there's like the third guy and he's just like, look, I just work here. These guys are weird. Can I just go?
He's like,
these guys are so weird.
These guys are crazy.
He's like, yeah, get out of here. It's fine. I got to put it above Shenmue, oddly enough.
Well, yeah.
I got to put it up higher than Fazanadu, but then I have to think about where does it rank compared to Blue Stinger.
Actually,
I was kind of thinking about putting it around Mega Man 3. Around-ish.
I like it better than Mega Man 3 simply because there's a lot of other Mega Man games, whereas there aren't too many games that we got in the United States that had the Neo-Kun that, you know, that was actually good.
I know there was an Eidos era spin-off of River City Ransom. Like, there was one from Yakuza also. And we didn't get it.
Yeah,
of course,
exactly.
So.
We didn't get it. So, which is really weird, but cool. And now it's been, you know, fan translated. And it kind of is like, like the original Goemon games, if they were beat 'em ups instead of just like less, you know, like kind of weird Zelda type games.
That's a good
one. But yeah, I would put it below. I would put it. Okay, how about this? I'm going to put it up. I'm going to put it below GoldenEye, above Sin and Punishment, Star Successor. Feel free to disagree.
That sounds pretty fair, actually.
And it's mostly just because it has had a lot of influence since its resurgence in the late 90s. I think that it has affected a lot of what we think about, like, what's a good classic game? And you get, like, games like Retro City Rampage and, you know, other stuff like that, that, you know, they are trading heavily on River City Ransom. And there's no doubt about it.
And even if the game is kind of broken as hell in a few places, it's still just great fun to jump right back into and just smash a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, I know. I've played over it several times once I got it, and it's definitely one I wouldn't mind going back to nowadays. I was just like, I had nothing better to do on a Saturday afternoon. RCR is a damn good choice.
But there's a lot of like indie kind of games that have taken one thing or another from River City Ransom simply because it has, you know, like I said, early emulation scene cachet. Let's call it that.
Yeah,
that's something that's kind of unique on the list so far. So yeah, can you guys live with that? Below GoldenEye, above Sin and Punishment, Star Successor.
I'm gonna be with it.
I approve.
I give it a thumbs up.
And we're done. What a fascinating and enlightening pair of discussions that was. But you know what? It wouldn't be a pair of discussions. It would be a trio of discussion. I regret that already. If you were a Patreon donor, that's right. You go to patreon.com/HG101, donate $2 or more a month, and you will get bonus versions of these shows where you rank a bonus game for each episode. For this episode, episode 66, I think the game we ranked was Gunpoint, the indie gunpointing game with head detectives and like cops or something, right? And so that was really cool. And it's definitely something you want to hear about. It's a game you probably want to play. That's, just a reminder, patreon.com/HG101. It doesn't take much, $2 a month, and you get the bonus versions. And, you know, there are higher levels. You don't have to pay that much more to get three of the most recent HG101 books on PDF as PDFs, and a little bit more higher up on that ladder. You get some of the actual physical copies of those books. So we really appreciate your help, and thank you for seriously considering it. We hope to see you there soon. That's all for this episode of Hardcore Gaming 101's Top Games Podcast. Special thanks goes out to @DrButlerX and Angry Ed for nominating those games. And thanks to those of you we haven't gotten to yet, we hope to get to you soon. Thanks to my lovely co-hosts and compatriots, to our editor, Jeff Rude, to our theme song composer, Mateki, to our technical assistant, video editor, and script writer, he's a triple threat, Bobinator. And of course, thanks to the support and feedback of listeners like you. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know I did. And you can help us out by subscribing to HG101's YouTube channel or by following @GC9X and @HG_101 on Twitter. You can also enter our shady den of depravity Discord at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us claw our way into the podcasting firmament by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. We just got a bunch of them this past week, so thank you guys for that. Some very interesting games were nominated, and some people don't even feel like nominating a game. They just want to give us a 5-star. It's like a high five, and we really appreciate that. So do it, or we'll introduce our viewers to the top 47K Secret Sauna Cam. Until next week, keep keeping it real.